everyone, and welcome to another Fresh Fiction Video Book Club. I'm Samantha T, and today's guest is award-winning Jennifer Dybell, author of The Irish Matchmaker. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hi, thanks so much for having me back. It's always so much fun.
Well, Jen, how about getting started for some of our readers who might not be familiar with you? Tell us a little bit about yourself, and how did you first get started writing?
So I've been an Arizona girl my whole life. I was born in a little tiny town in northern Arizona and have lived kind of all across the state over the years, and never really thought I would live anywhere else. And then not long after my husband and I got married, we ended up, doing a 2-year study abroad program, and we lived in County Donegal in Ireland. And we were there for 2 years. We learned the language, the culture, the music. And when we came back, I really just was like processing all the things that we had experienced. And that's when I came up with the idea for what would almost 20 years later become my debut novel. And I've been a writer my whole life. I started writing in my journals every night for hours and hours. Writing stories, things like that. And in college, my first English class was a combination literature and creative writing class. And my professor at the time told me I really should consider a career in writing. And I was like, thanks. I'd rather make some money. Because at the time I was studying physical therapy. And then I ended up changing my major to education. So joke's on me. So in my day job, I teach middle school English, and I have 3 children. Our oldest is 19. She's a freshman at the same university where my husband and I went. Our middle daughter she'll be 17 in a couple of weeks. She's a junior in high school. And then our son is 13, and he is in 7th grade, and he is one of my students this year, which is new for me. So it's always fun. But we also, as a family, spent about 6.5 years in Europe. My husband and our 2 girls moved back to Ireland for a couple of years, and our son was born in Ireland. And then we ended up having to leave unexpectedly and transferred to Vienna, Austria. And I started writing for the nonprofit organization that we were working with. And so all in that time, I started my blog. I started writing for a website called The Better Mom. I got connected with Trisha Goyer through that, and kind of she was the gateway into all of the connections that would become the dominoes that kind of fell into my path to publishing. And my debut novel, A Dance in Donegal, was published in the spring of 2021.
With all of that, since obviously you have nothing really to do, I mean, my gosh, how do you get into the right mindset then to write, especially when the first novel was taking such a long period of time? Because that's different from the freelance writing and other instruction that you're doing in the day to day. How do you get into that right mindset?
You know, I find the older I get, the more challenging it is. When that whole brain fog started to set in around a certain age, it really became a struggle to kind of shift. When I would teach all day and then come home and try to work on my manuscript, it would be really difficult. So I've really had to set aside time breaks, summer break, winter break, spring break. I get a lot of my writing and editing done during those times. But then I also like plan ahead. So I know going into the week, okay, Tuesday night, I'm setting aside 2 hours. I'm going to sit down and write. I have to be really communicate openly with my family. So, you know, with, it was 3 teenagers up until this last fall, 2 teenagers at home with busy schedules and sports and church and work and all that kind of stuff. We really have to stay in communication with one another so that they understand, like, okay, I'm out of pocket for this time. And so for me, what helps me kind of make that transition, lots of prayer. And I make a playlist for every book that I write, because by the time I finish one manuscript, if I try to listen to that same exact playlist for the next one, my brain's like, nope, don't like that. So I make a playlist of Irish music that kind of fits the theme of whatever I'm writing. And so when I play that, it's like that trigger to my mind, like, okay, it's business time now. So lots of balancing, lots of writing in the fringe hours, taking advantage of time off from school when I have it and things like that.
Well, and I always think the writing process is so fascinating because with your debut novel, it took quite a while before you got it right. And then you also had another book that you wrote over the pandemic, which went a lot faster, I understand. And then with the Irish Matchmaker, I read in the acknowledgments that you had a massive case of writer's block. So it seems like your experience each time has been drastically different.
Drastically different.
And what were the ups and downs with each of those then?
So with my debut novel, it was the blessing and the curse of not having a deadline or any real pressure. I had the blessing of just writing whenever I felt like it. When the muse would strike, I could sit down and write. The curse of that was as if the muse wasn't striking, I wasn't writing because I felt sort of selfish taking that time because it didn't count towards anything, you know, that whole imposter syndrome. And then once I was on deadline, my second book, The Lady of Galway Manor, was written pretty much in June and July of 2021. At a dining room table in the middle of the pandemic, and it flowed fast and furious, and it was probably the easiest time for writing a book that I had. And then I actually ended up getting the virus that shall not be named, and ever since then, it's been a different struggle. And I think something shifted in my brain or something, but. For this particular book, for the Irish Matchmaker, I'm not sure what it was, but I struggled. And so really this book was written, my writers group, we do a retreat in the mountains every fall where we go for 2 or 3 nights to this little, we all share a cabin. So it was written during that Christmas break and one other long weekend is pretty much when this book got written because I was writing just thousands and thousands of words at a sprint because other times I would sit down to write. And I literally had no idea what was going to happen next. And it was one of the most difficult experiences of my life. But at the same time, it was really empowering because I didn't have the option of giving up. And so it kind of reminded me that, you know, I can, like I tell my students, I can do hard things. And even if it feels impossible, like I can still do it. And I've received some of the most meaningful and touching feedback from readers on this book, I think. And so that has also kind of blessed me that like my pain wasn't wasted, that it's, you know, it went to something good and meaningful. And so yeah, it's I would hoped that with each book it would get easier, but I've just found with each book it just gets different.
A different and new set of challenges. Well, tell us about the inspiration behind this book. Even since you encountered different challenges as you were creating it, where did the initial ideas come from?
So there's this little town on the west coast of Ireland called Liadún Bhurna, and we used to drive through it all the time because when we lived in Galway, one of the things that we did was take tour groups that came over and give them and take them around kind of the west of Ireland. Oddly enough, our little catchphrase among ourselves was "We don't do Blarney." So we did all the other things. We did the Cliffs of Moher, we did Galway, we did traditional succession, we toured the bog and things like that. And so on our way down to the Cliffs of Moher, we would drive through Liadún Bhurna, and there's this huge billboard just as you're coming into town advertising our annual Manatee Festival. And so that was just in the back of my mind. And one day it just popped into my head about this festival. It happens to this day every September. It originally started in the late 1800s after a doctor had discovered these mineral wells scattered throughout the area. And one is like a sulfur well, one is copper, one is iron, and there's all these different things. And he figured out they had medicinal properties. And so he started advertising it to the wealthy, started coming to take the waters in the fall. And then that turned into trying to match each other's children up because they were finally around people at their station. Meanwhile, it's September, so the harvest is done. So the farmers were coming to town, they had money to spend, and they were looking for love. And so this festival was born, and it still goes on to this day with matchmakers. And I just thought to myself, what would happen if the matchmaker could match everybody but herself? What would that look like? And that's where this idea was born.
And then during your writing process, I mean, my gosh, I mean, listening to all this talk about Ireland before, I mean, there's just so much rich material there to lean on and being able to envision with that. But when you're actually in the midst of the writing process, is this a movie running in your head? Are you hearing the characters talk to you? What is that like for you?
Yes, I do feel a bit schizophrenic or multiple personalities when I'm writing. It's weird because I'm not a plotter, I do like think through the story when I'm not writing. And so when I do sit down to write a scene, it does kind of play like a movie in my head. I can hear the characters' voices, I can smell the, whatever, which we don't have smell-o-vision in a movie, but that would be fun. And I just kind of write out what's ha I describe the scene that I'm seeing in my head. And I think some of that is why this one was a little bit more difficult, because I knew the main events. I knew how it started, I knew how it ended, I knew what the main conflict was. But all the little connecting moments where that secret sauce and the magic of a story happens, there was a lot where I wasn't sure. I'd finish a scene and be like, okay, I know the next major point happens 3 chapters down, but I'm not sure what they're going to be up to in these 3 chapters. And so sometimes I'd have to wait until I could play that movie again.
Well, having driven so often through Lisdoonvarna, and really being familiar with it, how important do you think it was for the time that you lived in Ireland and your other overseas travel, and how has that impacted your writing in general, do you think?
I think it's really important because, and even more than just the time we spent passing through that little village, but just the time we spent steeped in the culture. I feel like I got to really understand the mindset of the Irish person, their worldview, way better than if I was just kind of doing research on Google, which I absolutely still do. But I think there's a level of authenticity of things I've experienced. I've sat with friends who are in crisis and heard how they view what's going on. I've sat with people and had conversations about how they view what's happening in their government or in other countries and things like that. And so, kind of being able to broaden that lens a little bit, as well as focus that lens tighter in, is super helpful to me to bring that. Readers have said, I feel like I just got off the plane back from Ireland when I finished the book. And I think that's why I'm able to do that. And I pray that I never lose that sense of reality there. But I definitely would not have been able to write the stories this way without that time there, and just really kind of starting to understand where they're coming from and how they view the world, to be able to tell stories through their perspective.
And then why this time period? Because this book starts off in 1905.
I wanted to kind of stretch myself. My first two books were both in 1921. My third book was 1935. And I really wanted to try something new. I really wanted to strip away any chance of modern comfort, and just explore what life might have been like back then when the matchmaker system was more prevalent in everybody's life at that time, whereas now it's kind of a novelty. And I wanted to kind of have it a little bit closer to the famine, because the hero is a farmer and from the desert, why the he's in. To explore a new time and kind of challenge myself a little bit, which apparently I did challenge myself quite a bit.
Well, and one other element that I came across in some of my research that I love is that you try to include a nod to Tolkien in Lord of the Rings in every book. And I feel I have to mention that since it was just Tolkien's reading day on March 25th. So I figured, hey, this all kind of syncs up. So, a big fan of Lord of the Rings and Tolkien? I mean, why do you want to include those types of nods?
I always feel like I'm gonna like lose my reader card when I talk about this because I'm a massive fan of Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. The Hobbit, I definitely prefer the book to the films. I feel like the films didn't need to be three for The Hobbit. But for Lord of the Rings, I just love the films. I love how well they made that one to life, even though they left a lot of things out or moved dialogue from one person to the other. But when I read the books, I really struggled. And, I just remember thinking, so help me if Tom Bombadil sings one more song, like I'm gonna punch somebody, like stop singing. So I really like the movies more than the books. And I think the first few nods kind of happened by accident. I think in A Dance in Donegal, one of the characters says something like, "All right, then, keep your secrets." And it just kind of snowballed from there. So I thought, well, now I have to try and work something in every time. And so I've told readers if they find my nod, if they message me and they get it right, then I'll send them a signed bookplate.
Oh, wow. Those are like those fun elements that readers always enjoy looking for. And you're right. I mean, if we can find those and say, oh, this is it. Because
Yeah.
like you, I'm a big fan. That was like lots of memories of dad reading me The Hobbit growing up. And yeah, the movies, they did a pretty good job. Well, Jen, I want to switch over to what we call our fresh fiction facts. These are a series of questions meant to kind of be off the top of your head, covering a wide range of topics. And sometimes we've been known to stump our authors, but that's not the intention. Okay.
Okay.
And we're going to start off with one fairly easy. Who would you most want to be stuck in an elevator with?
Oh gosh. I'd like seven people come to mind, depending on what I would want to talk to them about.
It could be a crowded elevator. That's okay.
So I was thinking Captain America, because he cracks all of his jokes in elevators. Aragorn, because Aragorn. Liz Curtis Higgs, because she's my favorite and most inspirational author. Jesus, because Jesus. And somebody who always has snacks in their bag,
Oh.
whoever that would be. So I can
Okay,
have
these are
snacks.
priorities. Yeah, because you never know how far you might be stuck.
Right? I mean, we got to be logical about these things.
Yes. Well, and if you've got Jesus in there with you don't have to worry about the beverage because he'd be able
That's
to turn the
true.
water into wine.
That's right. If everyone has water bottles these days, he could just like look at that
So I think
Stanley
you've got
and be
your
like,
bases
"We're
covered.
good." Yeah, I like that. Oh, yeah. I like the way you
Exactly.
think.
That, how do you celebrate a new release?
Usually, my family takes me out to dinner and gets me some kind of ridiculously decadent dessert because that's the way to my heart.
What is your favorite writing fuel?
Usually coffee, but also a lot of times Irish tea. My favorite tea is Lion's Gold blend, and so we always keep a stash of that. And so a lot of times I'll have a nice cup of Lion's Gold blend with plenty of milk in there, and that gets me in the right mindset. Feels like home.
Awesome. Okay, you talked about having playlists earlier. What songs are on your current playlist?
So for the book I just finished, it's just a hodgepodge of instrumental Celtic music. There are some, okay, I'm gonna look at it actually, because there are some like actual well-known songs on it, but I have writing. Because otherwise I steal things apparently. Unintentionally. Black is the color of my love's hair. Shivug, which is like I'm not gonna say it, but it's one that people know, they just don't always know the name of it. What else? Jug of Punch, that's another popular one. Lots of stuff from the Chieftains, lots of things from Alton, who are from Donegal. So yeah, that's what's on my playlist.
Okay, so if you're drinking lots of Irish tea still, what are the other things that either you just miss the most from Ireland that you try to import or get now that you're back in the States?
Brown bread, which we used to just buy in the store. And it's unlike anything, it's not like the really thick German rye bread. It's still really delicate. And so I've learned how to make that. The one thing that we have a really hard time getting is their sausages. Their sausages taste completely different than ours. And there's a crisp or potato chip brand called Tato, and their cheese and onion crisps are to die for. They're similar in flavor profile to sour cream and onion, but they're way better. And so we definitely miss that a lot.
Other than books, what is something that you own a ridiculous amount
Coffee mugs. Unmatched socks.
Oh.
I can't bring myself to throw them away because I'm just convinced that I'm gonna find another one. And then like really tacky costume jewelry, like lapel pins and stuff. Like if you think of the stereotypical elementary school teacher jewelry, I have like ridiculous amounts of that kind of stuff.
Okay, so like almost a different type of pin for every big school occasion then.
Yes, think all the holidays, all the seasons, and then I also have like teacher shirts that have like weird teacher puns on them.
With that, what is something that everyone else complains about? Like, what wardrobe piece that everyone always complains about, but you actually secretly love?
Oh gosh, that's a good question. I can't think. You may have stumped me. I know my son always complains about jeans. He hates wearing jeans. I love jeans. And I love a good dress. I don't wear them as often as I used to, just 'cause my job doesn't really lend itself to that as much, but I love me a good girly, frilly dress.
Okay. With your travels, what would be your ideal paradise?
Mountains, and then I turn around and there's the ocean and beach. And it's warm to enjoy the beach, but not hot. So if anyone knows
Okay.
a place like that,
So
let me
kind of
know.
that nice temperature element of, I can go with that, definitely.
Like I could be comfortable in either a long or short sleeve. That's my like sweet
But
spot.
not where you really need to have a coat or a jacket and
Yeah.
no. Yes, yeah. For us right now, that's kind of the time of year we're in for most days until things start kind of swinging crazily. So I feel you on this one. Okay, you've been kidnapped.
Oh no.
But 2 hours later, you're returned because you cannot stop talking about what?
Weird things my students do. And the dreams I had the previous few nights.
Okay. Can you tell us while protecting the innocent what is the weirdest thing from your students?
Let's see. So many to choose from. They like to try and stump me with their slang.
Oh.
So, like today, they taught me, like, they were asking me about something. I don't remember what they asked me, but I was like having a hard time with it. I was like, I'm really not feeling it. And they're like, you got to thug it out, Miss Dybul. You got to thug it out. And I was like, I have to, what it now? What am I doing? And so they taught me thug it out. So then I like to misuse their slang on purpose and then see their reaction. And usually it's something along the lines of, whoa, but like 20 decibels louder.
So either they are horrified that you're using it so incorrectly, or it's absolutely hilarious because, again, you are so far wrong. Yes.
Yes. So I guess that's really more weird things that I do. They definitely do some weird things. One of them, I teach 7th grade. One of them the other day was licking the desk.
Ew.
They're not, they're a mainstream student. I don't know why they were licking the desk. What else have they done? One of them kept like reaching into their neighbor's backpack because there was something in there that felt funny. Stuff like that. They're basically,
Things I try to avoid now. I don't
yeah,
want
yeah.
to lick any surface and or reach into anything that might be an unknown fuzzy. Just
No.
no.
Yeah, no, they're basically large toddlers. But they're
Lovely. So
fun.
you are having fun.
Yeah.
Yes. Would you rather go back in time to meet your ancestors or travel into the future to meet your descendants?
Oh, I actually just asked my students this the other day. I keep going back and forth. Like, I'm really super curious, like, what my like great 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 grandchildren, you know, would turn out to be like, but then I'm also afraid of like messing up something somehow. And then I would actually really love to go back in time and find my ancestors before they left Ireland and like see where they lived and like who they were. So if I could do that without messing up the space-time continuum, I would probably do that.
Okay. And of course, as readers, we always want to know what are you working on next?
So I'm currently in edits on my book that is releasing in January of 2025. So it's my first book that is not a February book. And this one, actually, I think was it Allison that was talking about the Donegal sweaters? This story, actually, the hero is a cottage tweed weaver. So he's a sheep farmer and weaves tweed for the Donegal Tweed Company. And he ends up with an unexpected house guest who had come up to Donegal to be the main housemaid at a castle. And when she got there, she found it all locked up and nobody was there. And she finds out that the lord of the house had passed away and his title had passed away with him. And she had no job. And now she was stuck hours and hours away from home. And so she ends up hiding out in his barn. He discovers her and then he gets attacked by sheep bandits. The day after, he's just been given a massive tweed order. And so she wants to try and convince him to teach her how to do the weaving in exchange for her getting room and board at their house. And So then we've got forced proximity. We've got grumpy sunshine. He lives with his sister. So then you've got that family dynamic. And so then shenanigans ensue. It's lots of fun.
Jen, we always love those unexpected house guests because there's so much that can happen there.
Yes, and
What is
so
what's the
much
best,
does.
right? And that's what we always look forward to. But with that, what is the best way then for our readers and listeners to keep up with you and find out exactly the different details?
So probably the best place to start is just my website. It's just my name, jenniferdeibel.com. On there, you have information about all of my books, links to sign up for my newsletter, which I send out typically once a month. Sometimes it's less than that. And then links to my social media. I'm most active on Instagram and Facebook. Have a Twitter account, but I don't really do much there anymore. Or I guess it's X now. But all of that can be found on my website. So it's kind of the one-stop shop.
Great. Well, Jen, thanks for joining us tonight and telling us about the Irish matchmaker. Please stick around for our happy hour with our readers offline.